And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, freeze my ass off. What are you doing? I'm down here in Tunica, right? And second day, it starts snowing. And at first, I don't know, for some reason, I didn't pack any pants or anything. I thought for some reason this was like swampland. I get down here, and it's freaking snowing. And the lady's like, yeah, it hasn't snowed but 30 times in the history of Tunica before January. And this is one of those times. So I figured that's good luck. But I've been losing at the casino. So I don't think that's luck at all. It's just bad luck.
Well, hell, Shane, I didn't know it was legal for you to wear shorts. I thought you'd be caught for indecent exposure there.
Oh, no. I tell you, it's a different animal. If you've never been down here before... I don't know. I guarantee there's about 100 bodies buried behind this hotel somewhere.
I got you. Well, speaking of dead bodies, Shane, Mike Leach, our favorite pirate coach here, he had another amazing press conference. As soon as I saw the footage of this, I had to include it. And just like every Mike Leach presser, you have no idea where this one's going to go. And this time, it concentrated on the Pac-12 coaches. If they got into a damn brawl... Who would be the last man standing? For some damn reason, this was the topic of his latest press conference, so we're just going to share this clip, and then we'll get into it.
Trying to think through them. Based on their players, Kyle would be. I mean, those guys hit you as hard as anybody in the conference. Plus, he's in good shape. Okay, so let's see. We got Kevin. Then Herm Edwards is in great shape. Let me think. Am I missing anybody? And I don't really care if they get ticked off. Because actually, privately, I think I would. But we're going to be more modest than that. I'm going to say Kyle or Herm, for sure. Kyle or Herm.
Why is that?
They're both in shape. For why? I mean, simple. This age, if you're in shape, you got a chance. They're both in great shape. You know, you look, I mean, they're both in shape. They both exercise. You know, pretty good and successful, background as far as conditioning, all that. And then both defensive guys, where their defensive players play tough and physical. So, yeah, I think I'd go with Kyle or Herm.
So you kind of think endurance is more so the biggest factor?
Well, you got Ed. Now, if you could stay away from him, you'd still be standing. I don't know, maybe one of the distance runner looking guys. I don't know. I'd have to – that's a tough question.
What about, like, size, like a guy like Mario Cristobal at Oregon?
Well, you don't want to get tied up with him. You don't want to let him get his hands on you because he is big and he's got long levers. You don't want him to get those things on you. He would be dangerous, though. There's no question. Formidable for sure.
Not to get you in trouble, but which coach would you least fear?
No, I can't say that. No. We already went down that hole way too far. All right.
All right, Shane, so Mike Leach, of course, he puts himself number one, but if he says excluding himself, he's got old Herm Edwards and all the coaches that are in shape there. What's your thoughts on Mike Leach's comments?
Herm is really the only one I know, and I wouldn't want to mess with him. Of course, I wouldn't want to mess with Leach either. He seems like a biter, you know, maybe bite my ear off or something.
Well, he noted Kyle Whittingham, too. I mean, that guy, from what I know, is pretty intense. I wouldn't want to mess with that guy.
Well, let me ask you, if he was in the SEC this year, who do you think he wouldn't? I wouldn't want to mess with Coach O. I think he would be the leader, wouldn't you think? Maybe him. Muschamp's got them crazy eyes. I don't know. It seems like he could snap at any second. And
Muschamp seems like a dirty fighter, so I don't think I'd want to mess with him. Cocho, I think in his prime, in his Ole Miss days, for sure, he'd be at the top of the list. But I think he's slowed down a little bit. I'll give you one that is kind of off the wall. I think old Barry Odom. I think getting into scrap. He's a former linebacker. It looks like he's still lifting quite a bit. I don't even think that man has a neck. You know.
Coach Mason, I mean, he's built strong, but he's only like 4 foot tall. So, you know, but he seems like he'd get about 10 punches into you before you realize what you're doing. Oh, shit.
All right, Chad. So, obviously, jumping back into the SEC action here, there was some pretty interesting comments, I thought, from Wednesday's coaches teleconference. And, of course, you know, these are a little inside baseball here. So maybe not terrific insight. People may not care so much about officiating, but that's been a hot topic in the SEC this week, and a lot of the coaches were asked about it. And I thought the best response came from Dan Mullen. And why I really wanted to include these comments is just kind of he goes inside the process a little bit of how these teams, you know, send in the plays that they disagree with. Like I'm sure Mississippi State had a handful they're sent in this week. And just kind of the behind the scenes of what goes on there. And then he goes even further into what the officials themselves are doing. And I just think a lot of SEC fans probably don't know this information. And since he's putting it out there, I thought I'd share it with you. And I think everyone will come away a little bit smarter. So here's Dan Mullen from Wednesday's SEC teleconference.
No, I think this. I think one of the things, being in this league a long time, and, you know, since Steve Shaw has taken over as the head of officials, the one thing I really appreciate that he does, obviously it's very frustrating. You know what, I always believe this. I make bad calls too, you know, during the game. And I might make a bad call during the game, and that gets heavily criticized. And the officials do, and it also gets criticized. So one of the things, though, that I love, that I have great respect for Steve Shaw, is when you call him, every week we turn in plays. And, you know, even in our game, I'll turn in the play and I'll say, hey, we missed this call. That should have been called. When he's telling you that, you know it's being addressed on their end, you know, of that, you know, they'll look and you'll turn in place and they'll say, hey, I think this should be a penalty. I don't think this should be a penalty. This is why we missed this call. And to be honest with you, if you call them, you know, I know they grade the film. They send the grades to the officials. They send out the film. You know, I mean, this is how it's been explained to me. They send out the film to the officials. These are the calls we made that we thought were good and the calls that we made that we thought were bad. So they're correcting the film just like we are as coaches. I mean, if we come in on a Sunday, we're evaluating the film. We're saying, hey, as a coaches, our players, when our players make a mistake, we coach them. This is what you should have done. Here's the mistake you made. We sit as a coaching staff. This is a bad, good or bad call we made. We try to fix that. And I feel really confident with Steve Shaw's leadership that the same thing is getting addressed by the officials. No matter how frustrating it is, they still are going to make mistakes, and you just, at the same as the players and the coaches make mistakes out there on the field, you're just hoping that, and my understanding that Steve, they do this, and they do it very well, is they're coaching the officials to get them better, just as we're coaching the coaches and we're coaching the players to do the same.
All right, Shane, so I know, you know, kind of like you were saying on previous episodes, you know, you see these mistakes, but you never see, you know, what these refs, you know, the punishment, so to speak, they get for these. But Dan Mullen kind of went into it a little bit here. They all get graded, and I would imagine if they get graded poorly enough times, they don't get to do this anymore. What are your thoughts on this information?
Yeah, I mean, I had no clue that. I mean, I figured there was some sort of process for accountability, but I mean, it sounds like it's a pretty in-depth situation. I'm just curious, like, What are the ultimate repercussions? Like at the end of the season, if you keep not grading out right, I mean, is there a turnover? I mean, I've never heard. Of course, this is officiating. You don't hear much about it. But I'm just curious. Like, if you keep making mistakes, do you have a job next year? Because you could tell me I'm doing bad all day long. But if I don't change my ways, then I'm still bad. You know.
Right. Now, I've heard of an entire SEC crew being suspended. I've heard of that before. And I do believe it's usually the same crews, you know, throughout the season. So I know that's a possibility. And I know, you know, some guys, when they get a little too old, they're like forced to retire, so to speak. And I also know that, you know, if they do really well, a lot of times the NFL hires them, because I think NFL officials, I think they make more. I could be wrong about that, but I know refs have gone from college to the NFL. I don't know many that go to the NFL to college, but I'm sure it does. And I also know that kind of the lower levels, maybe like the Sun Belt and whatnot, if officials do really well, a lot of times they'll get upgraded to the SEC. So there's definitely, you know, officials go down and up and all that. So like you said, we may not see it so much, but I do think at the end of the day, the more wrong calls these guys make, there is accountability there, and that's good to see.
Yeah, you know it's slow when we're talking about officials. I will say this. I've seen more officials get hurt this year than I have in years past. We had one go down last game against Tennessee, and I think there was one at the Tennessee-Georgia game he pulled up on. And, you know, talk about just taking time. I mean, when that happens, they still got to take a time out and tend to the injury and stuff like that. But I thought that was unusual, just seeing that many injuries.
Yeah, last week in the Ole Miss-Texas A&M game, Shane, a ref got hurt. And you know how the players on the sideline, they have that, like, medical tent where they can work on them?
Yeah.
They put the damn ref in one, and they put the tent up. I was like, I never seen that before.
Refs have feelings too, Mike. They're people too.
All right, Shane, jumping back into the football action, we're going to dive in a little bit into the recruiting here. I know we're getting closer and closer to the time when that's kind of important. And I really wanted to talk about this one just because we've mentioned it before, but the nation's number two running back, his name's John Emery, and he decommitted from Georgia a couple weeks ago. He's coming off a visit to Tennessee, but I guess he's not as interested in the Vols as some Tennessee fans may have wanted, because he announced late on Tuesday night that he is committed to LSU, and that's, of course, where he's from. I think he's the number, I want to say number three prospect in Louisiana overall, number two running back in the nation. Thoughts on, you know, this is a serious position of need. I think it would have been a huge issue for Coach O had he let this guy get out of state. What are your thoughts on the Tigers landing? Well, they haven't signed him yet, but they've got his commitment.
Yeah, we're not surprised. When we first heard that he decommitted from Georgia, I mean, obviously LSU was the first choice because, you know, Georgia's deep. Georgia's deep at the running back position and will be for a while. Now, I know this guy came out and said he's not afraid of competition, but, you know, this is LSU. These kids that grow up in the state of Louisiana, I mean, it seems like there's an extra set of priorities to stay in state. You know, just like you're playing for the whole state of Louisiana, and Coach O's hard on that. If you hear him, he really likes to protect the borders. So no surprise he's going down there, but he should start getting some playing time pretty early, I think.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be in contention to play immediately, which has got to be huge for him. And another reason we wanted to bring this up, Shane, during the SEC teleconference, Coach O was asked about, you know, they're not allowed to speak specifics on recruits, so they can't name him, and that I don't even know if they can address it once they're questioned about the name. But he was asked about LSU's recent success on the recruiting trail, wink wink, and obviously they're talking about this guy here. So Coach O just kind of went into that and just how big it is for LSU to keep these guys, the Louisiana guys, in state, because for a number of years here, Alabama's just kind of been raiding that state. And I believe the number one defensive tackle in the nation, he's from Louisiana, and it's an LSU-Alabama battle, so there's still work to be done. But here's Coach O's thoughts on just how big this is for his program.
Well, you know, our focus is always going to be on the state of Louisiana, keeping the top prospects in the state of Louisiana home, and it's a battle. And we're happy where we're at recruiting right now. Obviously, we have to finish strong. We haven't signed anybody. I have a tremendous staff. We have a tremendous support system. We recruit as a team, one heartbeat. And I just think that we have a lot of great things to sell at LSU. This is a tremendous university with a great tradition. And I'm fired up to where we are recruiting right now, but we have to finish strong. Anything can happen down the stretch.
All right, Shane. So I think more than any, you know, I don't think anyone is ever going to look at Coach O and say, you know, he's going to outsmart Nick Saban on the field. Obviously, he's noted as a recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he even has a place at LSU if he's losing these five-star players to Alabama. Am I out of line saying that's got to be his number one goal every time, to keep these guys from signing with the Tide?
Absolutely. I mean, if they're going anywhere else, you know, it'd be one thing if they were going to Tennessee or if they were going to Arkansas, but when you go to Alabama, that's when you're losing your biggest recruits from in-state to Alabama, mm-hmm. then that just, I don't know, that elevates that hot seat talk, which I don't think he has, but you know, if he kept losing players from the state itself, the admin would eventually get a little tired of that.
Yeah, and check this out, Shane. So this is just my ignorance. I guess I should have known this already, but I was talking to one of my LSU buddies recently, and I was not aware of this, but there is actually a high school on LSU's campus. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but Dylan Moses, Alabama's outstanding inside linebacker.
Yeah,
he went to that high school. So
oh, no.
Basically, the number one linebacker prospect in the nation, literally on LSU's campus. He was committed under Les Miles, signs with Alabama. I mean, when you lose guys like that, it's just a huge, huge black mark on your. I mean, literally. I mean, they should have been at every damn practice. Every. I mean, how do you let that guy get away?
Working out in the same facility and everything. Yeah, that one's tough. That sounds to me like maybe he wanted to get away from home or something. But mm-hmm. Didn't they lose a tackle a while back to Alabama too? The one that got in trouble with the gun.
Yeah, his name is escaping me at the moment. Calvin Robinson, I think
yeah.
was his name.
Big Rob. Yeah.
Alabama's one of their starting linebackers, another one of their starting linebackers, also from the area. I mean, they just lose guy after guy last year. This was not a Louisiana guy, but they had a commitment for about 3 years from the nation's number one corner, Patrick Surtain. And then National Signing Day, he flipped Alabama. So, I mean, this is the one team they cannot lose out to on the recruiting trail. So, if LSU is going to, you know, make this a rivalry again.
That's why they're always, you know, toward the top. There's so much talent in the state of Louisiana. And, you know, if you can protect that border and you could keep those studs inside the state, And then go pick a few from outside the state. That's why LSU's always toward the top. But, you know, you lose that, then you're just any other team in the SEC then.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, sticking with the recruiting theme, you know, like I said, we don't want to take too big of a dive here, particularly this is a 2020 prospect, but we have a little bit of information here that kind of makes this more relevant. But Tennessee lands a commitment late Tuesday from junior college linebacker Jordan Davis, who he was a Memphis native who nearly signed with Tennessee. He signed with Alabama, Shane. Did not qualify in school, so that's obviously why he's in junior college now. But he projects to be one of the top, if not the top, 2020 junior college prospect in the nation. And I've spoken to people close to him who said he really wanted to go to Tennessee the whole time, but I think it was his parents there that just kind of wouldn't sign his letter to go to Tennessee. And he's very close to Jerome Carvin, the Tennessee freshman lineman, Jeremy Banks, the freshman running back / linebacker. So this guy is very tight with those two. And it's interesting to me that Jeremy Pruitt seems like he's really made the Memphis area, that surrounding area, just a priority for Tennessee. And he probably recruited this guy to Alabama during his time there. Now he gets a big flip. You know, this guy decommitted from Alabama just a few weeks ago, commits to Tennessee. Is this a start of a little bit of a recruiting war here between Tennessee and Alabama, do you think, Shane?
Oh, God, I hope so, Mike. To be compared to Alabama recruiting, that would be awesome. And I'll take all the Jordans I can get. Last, you know, Jordan Murphy had almost 100 yards last week, and Tim Jordan had over 100. So, yeah. Just sign all the Jordans. I'm good with that.
And another reason I just wanted to bring this news up, because I thought this was kind of clever here, but Tennessee tight end coach, this guy by the name of Brian Niedermeyer, who Tennessee fans should know, he's great on Twitter. He's always good for a quote or just something to hype the fans up. And, you know, once again, just like Ed Orgeron with John Emery's commitment, he's not allowed to name the prospect, but, you know, these coaches send out subtle hints here on Twitter, and everyone knows what they're talking about. But following Jordan Davis's commitment to Tennessee, here's what Brian Niedermeyer tweeted out. And keep in mind, Niedermeyer was at Alabama with Jeremy Pruitt. They came to Tennessee together. But here's what Brian Niedermeyer said after that commitment. Sometimes you make the right decision the second time around. So that's definitely a subtle shot there at Alabama.
Little stab there.
Yeah, so I think it's funny that, you know, obviously Tennessee and Alabama are on two completely different planets when it comes to on the field, but I think this is the type of thing that Tennessee needs that swagger and some confidence going up against Alabama if they're ever going to beat them on the field. I think teams of Tennessee's past clearly intimidated by Alabama, and when your leadership is not and you start getting players that they want, there's a number of players that both Tennessee and Alabama are recruiting for this current recruiting class. I think this is obviously the first step to closing that gap. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're going to play on this next level, the Alabama-Georgia level, you've got to have some recruits in there, and you've got to have some studs, not just 3 stars and 4 stars. I mean, you've got to land some talent, some of those X factors to make every game competitive. So it seems like Pruitt and the staff have really, I don't know, if they get some, I know we're pretty close on a few of these 5 stars. I mean, they have a real potential chance to end the recruiting class strong.
Yeah, definitely. If they get some of the guys they're going after, they will finish with a top 5 class, which is pretty remarkable when you're looking at 2 games remaining and Tennessee is, you know, just clinging to hopes of a bowl game. But it seems like their recruiting efforts are definitely taking off under Jeremy Pruitt.
Oh, God, yeah. First year, potential bowl, and a top 5 recruiting class. Yeah, I'll take that every day.
All right, Shane, let's jump down to Auburn, where obviously we didn't have a podcast yesterday because you're on the road, but Malzahn met with the media on Tuesday, and I thought this was particularly interesting because, you know, obviously there's been a lot of heat on him. We talked about the viral video there that I sent out on my timeline, if anybody missed it, where it certainly looks like Gus Malzahn is mouthing, you know, they better not fire me. And a lot of people responded with, he's saying fine, which mm-hmm. If you go back and watch the tape, Shane, I could tell you exactly when he said this. This was after Georgia, DeAndre Swift had his big 80-yard run, and then Auburn comes out and has a 3-and-out. There was no penalties. There was no turnover. So if Gus Malzahn's worried about getting fined after a Georgia touchdown and a 3-and-out, that doesn't make any damn sense. But anyway, so he was asked during his Tuesday presser, you know, about his future. It's pretty bad when you got this mega deal and your AD and your president, everyone's saying he's coming back, but he's still getting asked about it. Here's what Gus Malzahn had to say about his future there at Auburn.
Yeah, that there's no doubt. I mean, I'm be the coach, and we'll get this thing turned around, and that's what we're going to do.
What's going to be different in the future?
Well, you know, I think if it kind of goes back to what I just said earlier, the youth that we have on offense, and you know, so that's really exciting as far as that goes. And then defensively, we recruited well and feel strong. We're going to be really good on defense again next year. Our special teams, that's the one area that has really greatly improved this year, and we have a kicker back and obviously one of the best punters in college football. So there's a whole lot of positives once we get to next year. But obviously, we have 3 games left, and that's really what I'm focused on, you know, right now.
Okay, Shane, we got big old Liberty coming into Auburn. This is not a time for Malzahn making statements guaranteeing he'll be around. What are your thoughts on this? And what are your overall thoughts to this comment?
Well, I mean, what else did we expect him to say? And I mean, I really don't think I don't think he can go anywhere. I mean, that's just so much money tied up. Is this where you want to be as an Auburn fan? Absolutely not. But you know, what are your options out there right now? Who wants to come into this? I mean, this is a tough job. Right. I mean, you got to play Georgia every year. You got to play Alabama every year. You got to play LSU every year. I mean, you talk about it, and they expect to win every year. So, you know, you fire this coach. I don't think you got a tough or a nice short list to go off of and say, there's a lot of maybe young coaches that like the opportunity to coach for Auburn, but you're not going to get the caliber guy you want after this season if you fire Gus.
Yeah, I think this is just the weird dynamics here of Auburn, Shane, where, you know, they fired Gene Chizik 2 years removed from a national championship. They fired Tommy Tuberville. I believe he won 6 Iron Bowls in a row. And then he got destroyed by Nick Saban and won, and then they fired his ass. So it's like, I mean, they are just quick to hit that button. Like you said, not only would their options be limited, but you also got to think, you know, if they're firing Gus Malzahn 1 year removed from winning the SEC West, what in the hell are the expectations levels there? And it's kind of like you said, you didn't even mention Texas A&M, which looks to be, you know, building a really solid program there under Jimbo Fisher. So I understand why there are some questions. I understand, though, that it seems far more logical that he comes back next year. But I'm going to ask you this, Shane, because what happens if, God forbid, Auburn loses to Liberty this week? And then they finish up there with Alabama.
Yeah.
If they were to lose out, would he still come back?
Oh yeah, yeah. you're stuck with it, man. You better get used to it. And Gus, one thing about Gus is he's been up and down. There's years his team's just dominant, and then there's teams that they suck. So as an Auburn fan, you kind of say, well, this is our down year. You know, maybe just think next year you're going to have a fighting chance. So, I mean, you got to be positive right now, because the last thing you want, I mean, if everybody keeps attacking Gus, and okay, Gus is, let's just say it, Gus is not going anywhere. But if he is like constantly on a hot seat, constantly talked about being replaced. I mean, if you're an 18-year-old kid thinking about coming to the University of Auburn, what do you think these other coaches are telling you? That Gus is gone. And so you're making it even harder for your university to excel and get the talent that needed to come in there because of all the negative recruiting probably going on. I guarantee that Saban's using it right now to all them boys down there that, hey, Gus ain't going to be here and I ain't going anywhere. I'm going to coach till I'm 90. So that's what's going on in the recruiting side.
All right, Shane, last thing I got for you. Let's trip to South Carolina, where I had a little interesting interaction here on Twitter on Wednesday. I just want to get your thoughts on this. According to the Big Spur, which is, of course, the 24/7 South Carolina site, they noted that if South Carolina beats Chattanooga, which is, I mean, it's basically a lock, Will Muschamp will tie Steve Spurrier for the most wins in school history after 3 seasons. Well, his first 3 seasons, of course, and become the first coach to lead South Carolina to a bowl game in his first 3 seasons. So those are all, you know, really impressive stats there by Malzahn. But I also noted that, you know, in that time, if you want to look at it, he's 500 in the SEC, which is, you know, it's not, you could definitely do worse at South Carolina, but you're 500 in the SEC. Florida's replaced their coach. Tennessee's replaced their coach. Texas A&M, which is a team that South Carolina places every year, replaced their coach. And Georgia hired their coach at the same time. So basically what you're saying is, you know, 3 of the main SEC teams they play year in and year out were going up serious issues, and they've all hired guys that look to be outstanding coaches. And that's before you even look at Clemson. I mean, that's just a damn monster in the same state. So I'm not saying that Will Muschamp should be, you know, fired or that he's done a poor job. But my question to you, Shane, is if they're basically 500 in the SEC after 3 years, now, of course, they probably will get better, but so will the teams around them. What is Will Muschamp's, I mean, what is the ceiling there at South Carolina? If they didn't get it done this year with Florida and Tennessee under first-year coaches, as well as A&M, I mean, is South Carolina ever going to win the SEC East under Will Muschamp?
I don't know, man. I mean, that's the thing. They had opportunities. the fact that Tennessee and Florida were both down for several years. And I granted they're making bowl games, but they didn't take advantage of the opportunity, because now you got Georgia just steamrolling people, and you got Florida feels like they're getting a little bit better under Dan and Pruitt. We just talked about how they're heading, and South Carolina's just kind of there, and we're not getting that. I don't know. I'm not feeling the buzz coming out of there. So I don't know. I think as a South Carolina fan, you still got to be a little happy with what you have, because before Muschamp, there was Spurrier. Before Spurrier, there was nobody. That university struggled for a long time.
They had Lou Holtz, Shane.
yes, I tell you, Mike. But the thing about it though is those fans, those boosters, those admin, they know where South Carolina has came from. So if you look from A to Z, yes, they are better. They're in a better situation. But just as today, they've missed some shots. I mean, they should have beat Florida. They should be playing in a better bowl game this year. So the fact that they're getting into one's great, but I really think they had an opportunity and they didn't seize it.
Yeah, my biggest issue with Muschamp this year is just that defense. And I know they've gotten banged up, but that's supposed to be his expertise. He's had the same coordinator, the guy that has been with him for about 8 or 9 years now, is down, joined him at Auburn, was with him with Florida. So the continuity should be there, but they just do not have a very good defense. And if they don't have a defense and their offense is so up and down, I don't know what in the hell they specialize in. Now, I do think it's wise. I don't want to compare South Carolina to Kentucky, because I think South Carolina fans are great football fans and they do have a lot going for them. But I think it would be wise for South Carolina to kind of look at Kentucky under Mark Stoops and just, you know, they gave him a lot of time, and it's obviously paid off big time for the Wildcats this year. And I think before anyone wants to put, you know, Muschamp on any kind of hot seat or anything, that's kind of the path that I think they need to take, because as long as they're not taking clear steps backwards, I don't think this year was like a step backwards. I just think it was disappointing. I think they got to stay the course with him at this time, and I think they will remain competitive for years to come the way he's recruiting. I just don't think it's ever going to get to the point where, you know, I just can't see them beating Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee all in the same year. Could you?
No. And one of the things that I look at too is how much does he get paid? He's one of the least paid coaches in the SEC. So, you know, there's probably not a lot of motivation to replace him, but they did invest a lot in the facilities down there. And if maybe that starts playing a toll here in the next couple of years, if they're not getting the recruiting classes or they're not getting out what they put in, then maybe they go out and try to get another coach and pay them a little more. But for right now, I think they're happy with what they got.
Yeah, I just would imagine it's tough to be in that state if you're a Gamecock fan and you look over at Clemson and you just see what a damn monster that thing is and wonder why we can't be it, you know?
Exactly.
All right, Shane, so that's all I got. A little bit shorter podcast, but you're out on the road, so I didn't want to hold you up too long. You got anything before we jump off here?
No, not a lot. I do appreciate everybody taking the time to hang out with us, and appreciate everybody that posted a review on iTunes. That really does help out quite a bit. Tomorrow I am going to work up a little history lesson for the Ole Miss Vandy game. So, usually we do those on Wednesdays or Tuesdays or whatever days, but, it'll be done tomorrow. So I'll go ahead and make it tonight, but kind of interesting rivalry. So, I'll have that ready for you tomorrow.
All right, Shane. Sounds good. Thanks for joining me. Thank you everyone for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.